Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Welcome in, everybody, to post-game coverage of the Browns. Frustrating loss to the Los Angeles Rams. Final score 36-19. The Browns finish a two-game West Coast road trip with an 0-2 record. And both losses, I think, felt pretty similar, in my opinion. Last week was maybe worse because of the injury to Dorian Thompson-Robinson, but this week, obviously, just not what you want to see from a defense that has kind of been touted as the best in the league all season. Not good enough against a Los Angeles Rams team that, to my eye, wasn't doing anything too complicated, but just seemed to be one step ahead of the Browns all day. I'm joined, obviously, by Brad Ward and Jake Burns. We'll break this one down quickly for you. I guess I'll just go around quick to get your reaction, gentlemen, to the loss tonight. Jake, I'll go to you first. It felt like a game that the Browns were in and competitive in, and then that Joe Flacco pick, maybe the missed extra point. I don't know. What point for you did it feel like it really got away from them?
I mean, I thought they played really hard, man. Like, everyone's upset. I get it. Like, I totally do. But there's, like, to me, a gigantic lack of perspective about the uphill battle that they're fighting right now. And I think that, I'm trying to, like, provide some perspective, but maybe you don't want to hear that because we all want to be emotional and upset that they lost. But there are things that, like, you can't overcome because of your personnel, like things that'll drive you a little bit crazy personnel wise that you won't be able to figure out. But, like, some of the little things, like how to account for fly sweeps and stuff like that, dropped throws, I think are really frustrating. But these are going to be coin flip games. Like, with where the Browns sit with the injury bug and the situation they're in collectively, to me, there are a lot of coin flip games. And I think Joe made a really errant throw, a really bad decision in that moment at the end of the game. But I think you probably would look at the defense and say that they didn't play well enough to win either. But they're in it until the 5-minute mark of the fourth quarter. And I thought they played hard. They just, some things didn't go their way. Some bounces they needed to have go their way. Plays they needed to make didn't get made. I'm not, like, I think there's a collective the season's over vibe. Like, they're 7-5 and have two home games. Like, they can win both. They're a better home team. We talked about it this week, Andrew. They're a far better home team right now. And they have two home games coming up that they can win. You know, like, I don't know if everyone's so afraid of the Jaguars, but, like, you can win those two games and be right where you want to be. So I'm frustrated that they lost too, but there, you have to keep a little bit of perspective about, like, the Broncos and Rams are playing good football and they're getting less beat up. The injuries are not hurting them quite as much. And the Browns had 17 names on the injured list this week. They're fighting a significant uphill battle that, like, you could see without Denzel Ward, they were getting picked on in that specific cornerback spot all game. So I get it. They lost. It's frustrating. They could have won that game. But, like, figure out what happened and go home and win two ball games that you can win. Win three of the next five. That you have three very winnable games there. And, like, I don't know, man. It's a collective vibe. And I'm not talking about you, Andrew, or any of us.
I know.
I'm just saying, like, socially, like, there's this vibe.
Yeah, I hear you.
This is all over. It's not all over, man. Like,
well, here's the thing, I think, Jake, is just that I think that what has really hurt people's confidence. And I know that the defense, obviously, it's pretty clear now, plays a lot different at home than they do on the road. But I think the feeling has been, the fear has been that there are some things schematically showing up that where the defense is getting exposed a little bit in ways that I think, I expect, I don't know how you feel, to continue, right? So I hear you. They're coming back to play the Jaguars and the Bears. Obviously, the Bears are a beatable opponent, but it feels like a lot of what the defense is putting on film is just going to continue to be an issue game after game because it's basic stuff.
I don't know. Maybe I feel like they are missing Denzel Ward just sorely. Like, I feel like they put a lot on him to be able to lock down one side of the field or be able to play man coverage the way they want to. And when he can't do that, I mean, look at what they were just exposed in the back end time after time today by good wide receivers. Certainly they need to change the way they're playing the jet sweep game. That's laughable at how they have gotten gashed in that. I guess I would ask you, Andrew, what don't you think is correctable moving forward about this defense?
No, it's not that it's not correctable. It's that they haven't shown the ability to correct it so far.
What is that?
The defending the bootleg, defending the jet sweep stuff, defending some of the it didn't show up this game because it's Matt Stafford, but some of the quarterback run stuff has been there sure. all year. So I just think that there's enough to me. There's been enough through these games that teams that are well schemed with good quarterbacks have shown that, you know, if you're looking for a recipe to beat the Browns, it exists now, you know, to beat their defense. And I think I would expect to see teams start to copy that.
I would just comment on two parts of the games real quick beyond that. And you're probably right, Andrew. I don't know. Yeah, teams are certainly going to try to take advantage of that. I would say in the first half when they went six straight three and outs on offense, when the defense was getting stops was pretty critical, right? Now Flacco starts to move the ball and they start to look better. They get back in the game and they had the game. Like, so you basically took whatever you wanted on that Flacco drive to tie the game that didn't end up tying the game because Hopkins missed the extra point. But they took whatever they wanted all the way down the field. And that defense was gassed. And the defense went on the field, got a three and out, and they got the ball right back. And you have a chance to go win the game right there. And you throw an interception that was absolutely absurd. So, I mean, yeah, they needed to go down the field and win the game right there. And instead, that was... I mean, that was a I don't know what the hell he was doing there. After you just dismantled their defense all the way down the field, why you would make that throw is beyond me. It's frustrating, but I'm kind of in the camp that I think that it's all still in front of them as well. They're 7-5. This team has to overcome a lot. It felt like they had zero margin for error today, I guess. Very small margin for error today, and you know, when they made mistakes, it cost them. We talked yesterday, Jake, and said, you know, it's going to be a close game late, and somebody's going to need to make a play, and the Browns didn't make any plays late, and that was kind of the difference in the game for me.
Yeah, notes I have on this: cover two killed them. They were awful in cover two. The first Puka Nacua touchdown is an inverted version of cover two, where you have a very vulnerable middle of the field that the Mike linebacker has to run with, whether number two or number three are vertical. If you're counting inside from a 3-by-1 set, outside's number one, number two, and number three. You work outside in on counting numbers. Really awful. I didn't like the design. I think there have been people I've talked to this year where that's a scheme that you can get away with here and there, but if you find teams that can scheme that up, which the Rams did, a little switch release vertical from Puka Nacua, you're asking Sione Takitaki to run with him. It's terrible. It's not great. Late in the third quarter, they ran cover two again, where Stafford clearly identifies it. This is something Stafford was doing all game. He's doing what's called a dead count, right? This is a very popular NFL and college concept, for that matter, where teams who – I'm sorry, I had a hair in my mouth. Teams who have enough time at the line of scrimmage, either a hurry-up team or whatever, you can get to the line and have enough time. Your quarterback will say it's dead until you hear something. Either it's a color, it's a call. You'll hear very popular in the NFL to hear turbo is the call. That means that next sound, you're snapping the football. He was continuously dead counting the Browns all day and giving them a way to what you call unfold the defense, where the defense will give you hints about what they're going to do because they think you're going to snap the football, and they'll like sneak up or cheat to either their pass coverage spot or they'll sneak to where they need to go. The last 2 weeks on the road, as you would expect, quiet environments for the offense, teams have killed them with it. So it's pretty clear the Browns aren't being deceptive enough in what coverage they're in. I was encouraged by some of that against Pittsburgh. It seems to have reverted, something to study in the film study this week, but there's not a doubt in my mind that these teams' offenses right now, especially heady quarterbacks who've seen a lot of ball like Russell Wilson and obviously Matt Stafford, had a great feel for the coverage. Late in the game, I think, like I said, that Rams touchdown to make it 20-13, that big drive they had, he identified cover two. They ran a smash concept to it. He gave a shoulder fake to the flat, pulled Mike Ford up, threw it over his head. And again, they're playing Mike Ford and Khalif Elassi. They're down two DBs that are very important. Either Greg Newsom's playing outside and you would like somebody else to play inside. We all saw what happened last week with Greg Newsom not stepping up playing outside. So that was rough. The Browns' plan, I clearly in this one, is we're going to put him inside and try to replace him and play Khalif Elassi, and we're going to play Mike Ford, both of which terrible games today, guys. Just terrible games. And that's going to happen every now and again with backups. But they were manipulated by Stafford all game. That was a problem. So there's two massive breakdowns in cover two. The jet sweep stuff, I don't know how they're defending it. No idea. If there's, like, most teams will have somebody step up, they'll rotate, go one safety, rotate back, the next safety's up. Most teams will also say if you have an edge opposite the initial motion, he's responsible for stepping up and eliminating that. The Browns had no plan. They look like they've never defended it. We watch teams, countless teams this year, run that for effective yards. The 49ers, ironically, in the Shanahan McVay tree, guys, ran that really well against the Browns in week 3, and they got a really fortunate holding call. And again, it was probably holding, but the guy didn't need to hold him. They didn't need to hold him. That play was going to break loose no matter what. So they got an unfortunate or a very fortunate call to eliminate that, but that killed them all game. So they're cognizant at the second and third level that any flat motion, if it's handed off, we're done. We can't defend it. They have no plan there. So that, to me, is the frustrating stuff, right? Getting picked on Mike Ford, Khalif Elassi, you're beat up. You don't have Cam Mitchell. You don't have Denzel Ward. I can understand that. But the simple schematic stuff where you're unfolding your entire defense to the quarterback pre-snap too early, or you're not defending the jet sweep stuff. It's actually fly. Jet sweep isn't shotgun. Fly sweep is under center. That's just the way I've grown to know it. So you're not defending fly sweep stuff well enough. That's the frustrating stuff. I thought Flacco was good enough to win today. Good enough to win. I think you probably would all agree with me. Made a ton of great throws. Pocket poise. He can do it. The throw at the end of the game is inexcusable. I don't know. Joe's probably talking to the media right now. I don't know if he just didn't identify like John Johnson standing back there and thought he could just – we've all kind of saw it throughout this game. He likes to just sort of arm punt the football downfield sometimes just as a means of like, A, I'm not taking a sack, or B, if it gets intercepted, then – you know, we could, it's just the same as a 40, 50 yard punt, maybe in a third down. But that's first down, first play out of this drive where you're at 20-19. It's an inexcusable throw from Joe. We'll look up the quotes, but you can't do it, man. Throw it into the sideline, live to fight another down. Like, you can't do it. That's inexcusable, which is a real shame because he played a fantastic football game for a guy not playing football as recently as 2 weeks ago. So I thought the offense, I didn't think they played bad. I thought they played well enough to win. I think if they could redo that drive, they probably get – I thought they'd score 27 points this week. There's a chance they could have if they don't have that horrible throw at the end. Didn't run it well enough collectively for most of the game. Second half, they started to figure some things out, but the first half, ineptitude in the run game really hurt them. The guard center guard stuff is concerning for me. Like the postage – and I'm on a tangent. Shut me up whenever you want, Andrew. Like the postage false start. I went back and watched it like 4 times. They marked him short of the 35. If you go watch it, you can see Postage shuffle the ball forward 2 times, and the ball is sitting over the 35-yard line. He's clearly moving the football forward.
Right.
Like, I don't know what the issue is here, that a guy is a veteran center 2 weeks in a row. Last week on a 3rd and 1, goes to 3rd and 6. They end up actually on that sequence of events, 3rd and 6, get 5 yards, 4th and 1 again, and they fumble the snap. And then this one, it puts them in a 3rd and 5 instead of a 3rd and 1, and then they can't convert on the next 2 throws. So, like, how on earth you're having that issue? Cedric Tillman had that huge – now, they got a break and caught a football on the play after, but Cedric Tillman's not being on the line of scrimmage. So there's some things that you know they should be better at. Obviously, there's some inexcusable stuff there. But, again, their margin for error, like Brad mentioned, it's tight. It's tight. You can't make those mistakes when you don't have the hero ball players. You lose Amari Cooper early, right? Like, they don't have those answers to make up for the mistakes as well as you would like. So you can't make them. And Postage in that snap is, that's awful. And Joe, and again, I'm not trying to hold Joe to some standard, but any quarterback that makes that decision, whether you're PJ Walker or Joe Flacco or Deshaun Watson, you need to be held accountable for that. That was a bad choice, a bad throw. And it was so far poorly underthrown that Elijah Moore couldn't even get back to it in time to disrupt it or intercept, tackle John Johnson, making
really bad throw
at that point. So yeah, like
just situationally.
It's you left it. They should have won that game. It's 36-19, but it's 27-19 with like 5 minutes left. there's a way to win that game, and they didn't get it done, and that's disappointing, man. It's really disappointing. Sorry, it's 2019 with 5 minutes left. So
yeah,
you know, there it is. That's my notes that I wrote down throughout the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's all really good stuff, Jake. I think that, you know, that paints a real picture of some of the stuff is very situational, right? To Brad's point, they are missing their best cornerback, and it shows, right? And their Myles Garrett clearly was not at 100% today. I think that was pretty obvious. Amari Cooper leaves in the first half with a concussion. You know, and probably will miss the Jaguars game the way that those tend to go. You know, so yeah, I mean, the injury issues continue to mount. They have not gotten a break on those game after game, week after week. And then, you know, yeah, that then combined with some of the schematic stuff on defense, some of the sloppy stuff on offense. I think that's where the frustration comes from. I think that, you know, to go back to where we started, I think I'm frustrated because, you know, I don't think that this stuff wasn't happening when they were winning. When they beat the Ravens, that was an incredibly sloppy game by the Browns that they got away with because they managed to win, to a lesser extent against the Steelers, but similarly, you know, you can go back further into the season. I think that there were some sloppy play against the 49ers. They get bailed out by a missed field goal. My point is that when you're winning, it feels ungrateful or ungracious to complain about mistakes. I think the feeling that people have is the winning has stopped. So some of the stuff that we have not been maybe as pushing as hard as we could have at times, like penalties, you know, and some of the schematic stuff defensively, now takes on a little bit more importance because the wins aren't coming. And I think it, the last two games, you know, the feel that I've had is that the Browns, you know, belong on the field with those teams, are playing as hard as those teams, but have made sort of crucial mistakes in crucial moments that have cost them those victories. So it feels like games that they're letting get away rather than games that they're being soundly beat. And I think that's where the frustration comes from. Brad, going forward from this game, the last two games, are you more concerned about the offense or the defense?
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I feel like the offense is what it is this year, kind of, right? Like, they're going to score around 20 points. They're going to give you, you know, and I'm interested to hear your guys' thoughts on moving forward at the quarterback position, just because although Flacco did make that terrible throw, I thought he did provide what looked, or maybe it's because they couldn't run the ball at all, but and he had to throw it 40 sometimes, which I'm sure wasn't what they wanted to come out and do, offensively, but he certainly looked more competent operating the offense than DTR did. Does he give you the best chance to win going forward? I don't know. I think they have more problems on the defense right now. I also think, like, Puka Nacua making plays and Cooper Kupp, you know, not so much this game, but and their running back is a good running young running back, Kyren Williams, with some special attributes. All of the Browns guys that are like that aren't playing right now. Like, they don't have anybody like that that can go make a special play for you on offense because they're all hurt. So it's hard to be hard on the offense, I guess. Sure, on defense, I understand some of the schematic stuff. Man, they just keep taking hit after hit. And I guess I felt like situationally, that's why you have to be more careful in that situation. But I thought Flacco operated the offense better than we've seen anybody this year at times. Do you want to go forward with him, or do you have to go back to DTR because he's a rookie and you think he might have a better ceiling?
Jake?
I think it's quite obvious to me Kevin's very comfortable with a quarterback like Joe Flacco. The operation, how they work from under center, the concepts they call in play action, how he operates from the gun. He doesn't take sacks. He throws the football away. He doesn't really take many negatives. I think everything he wants in calling a synonymous game plan is tied to Joe Flacco. I don't think, put it this way, I don't think Kevin Stefanski is quite comfortable yet calling games for mobile quarterbacks. Like, I just don't. Guys who can use their legs to the advantage, I don't think he's quite comfortable there. So, and again, I think Joe played well. I really do. He made one horrible decision at the worst time, but yeah, he played a very good football game and delivered throws that we haven't really seen many of this year, not in the form of which he was doing consistently. So I don't have a problem with whatever decision they make. If they want to get DTR more opportunities because he's the future of the franchise angle here, as far as like a long-term piece behind Watson, or potentially if he's really good, plays out in front of Watson someday, you never know. So the world works in mysterious ways. That could happen. They could want to see more of that. I also don't blame them for saying we're more comfortable with Joe because of this is how our offense is going to have to live, right? And this type of structure, play action, to making decisions off play action, and then being able to live in the shotgun with quick throws and, you know, pretty accurate and decisive as well. But like I said, he's 38, so I understand the angle of, like, you know, we don't want that. But you are 7-5. You do have games coming up that you can win, and you are in the middle of a playoff hunt. So, you know, there's that element lingering too. You're not 5-7. In sort of on the fringe of the hunt graphic, right? Like they've been before. You're 7-5. You're still the sixth seed. You have a real chance to win enough games to make the playoffs. So if you feel like Joe Flacco is the answer for you because you're going to get more consistent play and you feel like you can get in a better rhythmic play calling structure, that's fine by me too. I don't have any issue with the direction they go here because I think DTR made enough positive strides in that Broncos game that I would feel comfortable with them reverting to him. But again, for me, Kevin is more comfortable calling a game for a guy like Joe Flacco right now. Maybe that alters in the offseason if they alter the coaching staff and get some different thought process in here, to the point of, like, again, using a quarterback who has genuine mobility to their advantage, right? Like that's just something he's not really quite comfortable at. So that's where I'm at with it. Don't have a problem either direction, as long as it's not PJ Walker. And I don't think they're going to go back in that direction.
I think there's some concern that, and It was mentioned this week, or said somebody, I don't know if it was on my show or when we were talking to Jake, but I think there's a maybe like a short period of games where you can get this level of play from Flacco, like, and then it might fall off. So maybe you hope to get this closer towards the end of the season if you had to turn to him. But I think once he's in there, you kind of have to ride with him now, at least for a couple weeks until it putters out, right? Like, because for me, this was the best looking offense we've seen when there's no running game. Pass offense, which is called the best looking pass offense we've seen for most of the year, maybe the second half against the Ravens excluded, right? Or whatever. Or the Tennessee game. Where are you at, Andrew? Do you feel like it needs to be DTR? I'm just curious what you guys are thinking.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I've been thinking about this while you all have been discussing it. I don't know that the Browns have had a quarterback controversy. This isn't really a full-blown controversy, but I don't think Stefanski's ever had to choose between two relatively viable options. As since he's been with the Browns anyway, right? It was always Mayfield's show, and then it was Jacoby Brissett that was clear-cut, and then Watson came back. So it's been you know, there were some times I think where some people thought that perhaps you would want to, you know, see something other than Baker when he was injured, but that was more about his injury than who you thought he was as a quarterback. So I can see the argument both ways. I agree strongly with what Jake said, that the offense, this looks like the Kevin Stefanski offense that we have kind of come to know over 4 years in Cleveland. And I think that's, honestly, I think that's worth kind of thinking about a little bit as the season ends and we go into the offseason, because that's disappointing, frankly, right? Like,
it's not what you can go forward with, but
yeah,
it might be what you need right now.
But you're also, yeah, you're not. I think the question is whether or not he's what does he need to do to get comfortable with players with more athletic ability? Because
sure.
I think that's staring him in the face.
Yeah.
As far as next week, though, I just think the Jaguars defense has been a top 10 unit all year. So I would tend to lean towards Joe Flacco getting that start. And if, you know, like you said, if the flame starts to flicker and they need another jolt or a little bit more playmaking, then I think maybe you turn back to DTR. My hunch, just based on the way the season is going, is that both players play again before the season ends.
Sure, yeah. So it's a week-to-week operation here in Cleveland.
Yeah, it sure is. It sure is, yeah. And you know, that brings me to one other thing that I really wanted to discuss. I know that the Rams have Aaron Donald, and he's still one of the best defensive players in the league. But their run game performance over the past few weeks is back to being really concerning, right? And I don't know from watching the TV copy how much of it is scheme, how much of it is offensive line performance, how much of it is running back performance. I think it's kind of like when we talked about the defense last year, it's all of the above, right? The scheme seems bad. The running backs are incredibly frustrating to watch. And the offensive line, even beyond the two backup tackles or replacement tackles, however you want to call them, but you've got Joel Bitonio, Ethan Posich, who they re-signed this offseason, and Wyatt Teller, two top five paid guards and a center that you committed to for multiple years, and they're getting beat up on the interior week in, week out. And then I just want to throw this in there because I thought this really pissed me off. The lack of effort on that last drive. I know that the game is over. I know that you don't want to maybe be out there getting your ass kicked by Aaron Donald, but across the offensive line, the lack of effort on the last series in pass blocking was noticeable, and it ended up in a safety. Like, it was an embarrassing way to end that game, and I think they deserve some criticism for essentially, you know, kind of mailing it in there. So I want answers, because there's too much, even with what's going on at tackle, there's too much talent on this offensive line for them not to be able to run the ball at all week after week after week. Jake, you want to talk about it?
Yeah, I'd love to. Love it. It's a fantastic topic. It's something we have to hit on. They're paying them too much money. We've said it all year. They've not been good enough. We talked about in the preseason that for what they're shelling out to these guys collectively on the offensive line, they need to dominate games. They need to be a big part of the reason they're winning, because you have invested so much into them. Two extensions at guard, a new contract for a center. Those guys have to be your group. They have to be your guys. And the collective of Joel, the collective of Wyatt Teller, and the collective of Ethan Posich has not been good enough. They've had good games sporadically, but they have not been good enough to offset what's gone on at right tackle in a small sample size, because DeJuan has been pretty good and what they've dealt with at the left tackle position. So I have no argument. They're not playing well enough up front. I've said it. The penalties, you know, I again, pressure's coming through. And Joel is not immune to it. I hate having discussions about Joel Bitonio not playing well, because I just admire the guy, but he's not playing well enough this year for what you needed him to be. Now, I don't know if the scope and the knee and it never has solved itself, but I would say he's not playing like himself. At the minimum, he's not playing like himself. So it's been off. It's not been good enough. If you're looking at units that have failed this group this year, the collective offensive line has failed them. You know, and that's crummy, because, you know, when you talk about bringing in backup quarterbacks and stuff, if you have what do you know? When you look at, like, say, a popular talking point is Nick Foles, right?
Yes.
That Eagles offensive line was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. Like, you cannot have the pairing of a bad offensive line, or at least a group not playing well, and then a backup quarterback rotation. It's a death sentence. And again, like, perspective speaking here, it's 2019 with a chance to go win the game with 5 minutes left. It's not like they're getting their doors blown off in either of these games, the last two, although it, you know, looks like it at the end of the game, 29-12, 36-19. It looks like it. That's not the case here. So we're trying to keep perspective. But again, like if you're a coach who's asked, did your guys play well enough in these portions of the game? No, I didn't. I did not think they played well enough in that portion of the game. So that's a big bummer. And it's just, I feel like we've had many of these discussions this year that have been built around the guard center guard not being good enough. And let's hope it rectifies itself in some fashion, because they need those guys over the final five games if they're going to win three of these five to have a chance to make the playoffs.
Real quick on this topic, just statistically, Kareem Hunt, 12 for 48 with a long of 7. Listen, he's really good in short yardage. When they need a yard, he gets it, right? Like, yeah, they get it. He's been fine, right?
He can fall forward.
Yeah, exactly. And he can fall forward, absolutely. Jerome Ford, 9 for 19 with a long of 10. That means his other 8 runs were for a yard about a piece, right? That is where the problem is, because Pierre Strong comes in and I once again think he looks like he's the most explosive of all three and finds a way to at least get in creases and get upfield quickly. I feel like he moves through traffic better than any of these three. But once again, you know, he was in on the debacle last week on the end around and everything else. And he can't. It was proven once again today he blatantly cannot pass protect. So he's a liability there. But I do feel like if you're going to run the ball, you know, I'd like to see him implement it a little bit more. I think he's better at times,
yeah. Well, and
vision-wise than Ford is. Go ahead.
I think there's a little bit of a personnel problem here too, because Jerome Ford was counted on to be your backup running back, and he has not been up to that task. I think it's safe to say at this point. You bring in Kareem Hunt to kind of address Nick Chubb's injury. I don't think Kareem Hunt, I think, you know, we talked about this week, Jake, you know, he's been, you know, where we thought he would be based on how he played last year. The leadership part is great, but you know, he has no explosion left in him. And then Pierre Strong, you trade for him, but he can't pass protect. And you know, he struggles to hold onto the ball at times. So you don't have a reliable running back. And so part of this, I think, is also a personnel issue, right? Where you are ending up playing players that, you know, and I'll talk about left tackle too. They're playing Garon Christian, who they signed off the street because James Hudson can't get it done, right? So I think there's a personnel component here too, where some, you know, injuries expose your depth sometimes. And you could talk the same thing about the defense. You know, Mike Ford is here to play special teams more than he is here to play cornerback, but he can't play cornerback, right? They sign, you know, Khalif Elassi at the end of the preseason, and he's been getting ready all season. Well, you know, that doesn't seem to have worked out that well either. Greg Newsom, who I've been harping on, is a first round pick who hasn't really developed in 3 years. So you start to, when the losses happen, you start to look at some of the players that could step up and didn't step up. And I think, right, I'm looking at, you know, the same guys that I was looking at last week in a lot of positions, just not living up to their draft pick status or what they've been paid, or the fact that the front office thought that they were the right person to come in and fix the situation. I do also want to shout out Brian 021 in the chat for making this point, which is, how much is it Nick Chubb covering up for a, you know, average offensive line play? And I think that's a very fair question, because we know how good Nick Chubb is at not only seeing holes that almost aren't there, but then also breaking a tackle to extend a play. You know, I don't think it's so much so that you could say that Joel Bitonio's average. I think it's, you know, he's been good, and now the worry obviously is his age. But I think it's worth, when you talk about the run game holistically and the one player leaves and, you know, you've still got your starting interior three and a different committee of backs, and it's not happening game after game, it does start to feel like how much of it was being propped up by Nick Chubb. So, all right, we've got the Jacksonville Jaguars next Sunday at 1, back home.
When?
I think it'll be a relief to the fans. I think it'll be a relief to certainly at least the defense, who definitely seems to play a lot better at home. I think the team as a whole will be very excited to get home late tonight after staying out on the West Coast all week. Jake, you really touched on this earlier, and it is that time of year now where you're starting to look at the remainder of the season as a whole, right? There, it's not next game so much as the next few weeks. I just, you know, you kind of indicated earlier that you're not feeling as worried as some people are about where they're headed and the fact that they've got winnable games and they've got seven already in the bank. So, Brad, I'll ask you, how do you feel? Do you think they can snap this two-game losing streak against a Jacksonville team that has been playing some pretty good football and plays Cincinnati tomorrow night?
Yeah, I think that they win next week at home.
Okay, there you go.
You can put it on. You can put it on the board. I'm telling you. Go ahead, ladies and gentlemen. Put it on the board. No, I'm serious. You know, Stefanski doesn't lose two in a row very often. I don't think. Mm-hmm. If we go back and look at the records, them coming home is going to be a nice bounce back spot refresher at home in front of their own crowd. Hopefully, maybe they get Denzel back, maybe you get some things with Flacco in there. Maybe some new life in that offense, we'll see what. But yeah, I think they bounce back and win next week. I really think they do. This team has, despite all of their faults and errors, they've still been very resilient all year long, and I think they will continue to be resilient because I think that's who they are. I think that's who they are.
The biggest test of that resilience is coming up this week.
It's coming. And so
the Jaguars are a very good and a very physical team. And the Browns cannot afford, in my opinion, cannot afford a three-game losing streak.
Agreed. I think they win.
I just want to reiterate, I'm obviously, you know, you don't want to lose. I'm not trying to excuse losing. And I know you're not saying I said that either. I'm just kind of trying to make sure my point is clear here. I understand they lost two. It's not good to lose two. And they could even lose the game to the Jaguars. They could. But there's a very winnable path, even at 7-6, to get to 10 wins. You can beat the Bears. You can beat the Jets. And you can beat the Bengals at the end of the season. So, like, I understand that the idea of, like, the season is falling on top of us is possible. And, like, it's just an unavoidable thing for Browns fans because we're scarred. Deep scar tissue. I say it all the time. But there's still a path to 10 wins and let it sort itself out. I think you can get there. Now, I would prefer that the Jags beat the Bengals so they're coming in a little fat and happy when they come to Cleveland and not pressing a little more, right, about the division. I would prefer that route. But, and again, the Texans are beatable too. I know you're going there, but, you know, we watched today. They very much had a really rough time with the Broncos, who I view the Browns on a very much the same level as. It's a controlled environment in a dome. Like, I just, and they lost Tank Dell. It sucks. It sucks to lose these two games. We wanted to split them if possible, and you had a real chance to split it with two different starting quarterbacks, which is still wild to think of. But, like, come home, play a good Jags team, put it all on the line. Whatever happens, happens. And then there are four extremely winnable games left to close the season to get to 10. And it's not even crazy to think about 11 wins. So the season is not – that's my messaging, and I just kind of want to reiterate it. Bad loss today, lost the game in some key moments, and the defense is a little bit broken. We are concerned about where the defense is heading. I have genuine problems with it. Myles Garrett said today didn't affect him that much, the shoulder. They just had a great game plan for us up front. Well, how are you going to solve that? Because that cannot be the consistent issue. The defense has real problems against their tendencies to solve. But they can come together, and they can get right, and they can win enough ball games to go to the playoffs. So that's, again, that's my point. That's what I want to remind everybody about. Sky is not falling. Season's not over. They're 7-5. It's all right there in front of them to go seize the day and win. And we could be sitting here, like we were sitting here 2 weeks ago, fat and happy, 7-3. Couldn't talk us off the mountaintop after beating Pittsburgh. And then now from 2 weeks from now, the Browns could be 9-5. And we're all sitting here like, all right, where are we going? First round, we buying wild card tickets? Or where are we meeting at? Where's the bar? That's the NFL. It's a week-to-week thing. We talk about it all the time. You just got to take it as they come. You can count the Browns out of that Jacksonville game all you want, but it's a home game where they clearly play better, and it could be nasty weather for a Florida team coming north. All the elements could be in the Browns' favor there too. So let's just see how it goes. I'm curious. Listen to this from my perspective. I'm curious how they bounce back. How do they? This is your being tested in a way you haven't really been tested all year. Two rough losses, haven't been home in 2 weeks, haven't laid in your own bed in 2 weeks, haven't seen your family. How do you bounce back? And let's define the season off of the bounce back in the coming weeks. This is all in front of you. Nothing is lost. These losses did not define their season. So let's push forward. Let's go win some games we can win, and let's get to double-digit wins and go see what happens in the playoffs. That's my messaging if I'm Kevin. It sucks. You watch the film. You correct what you're doing wrong. Defense needs to have a big hoorah, get together, and figure some things out here because there's some responsibility and identification stuff happening that's inexcusable, but you're still good enough to go win enough games to win, to make the playoffs. It's there. So go do it. Just go do it. Who cares what happened on this trip? Figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, you beat some good teams earlier in the season, some really good teams. So I don't think any name value, and I know Jacksonville is a good team, but by definition, if this was a betting show, we would consider this a bounce-back spot for the Browns, 100%, going home to play Jacksonville, Jacksonville coming off of a Monday night game. Just would.
Yeah, and like I want to reiterate, you have the Texans. If you beat the Texans, you own the tiebreaker. You own the tiebreaker over the Colts. You own the tiebreaker over the Texans. You have those head-to-head wins. Like then the other three games are the Bears, the Jets, and the Bengals. So if you can just beat those three teams and then hold it down, like get a Texans win, like it's all there. It's all there. Is what I want to reiterate.
So
get
playoff picture.
See what happens.
Playoff picture wise, 11 wins gets you in. There's no doubt about that. From where they are. 10, it gets tricky because it depends on the tiebreakers. There's going to be other teams with 10 wins. I think that's pretty clear at this point. The Colts have a very easy schedule running in. The Texans have a fairly easy schedule running in. The Steelers, their road gets a little tougher. Kenny Pickett now is expected to miss a few weeks. So Mitch Trubisky starting against the Patriots on Thursday night, that'll be an all-timer. I think obviously figure out what your plans are now to watch every second of that game on Thursday night because you won't want to miss Bailey Zappi against Mitch Trubisky. It might finish 0-0. But my point here about the playoffs, 10-7, you probably don't control your own destiny because I think, you're right, they have the tiebreaker over the Colts. If there's a three-way tie, the head-to-head tiebreakers are eliminated. So now you're talking about conference record, other tiebreakers. So you can still lose out to a Colts team if it's a three-way tie. So it becomes a concern if you're 10-7. So I agree with you. Between the Jaguars and the Texans, they have to find a way to win one of those games. And I'll just say it's always tough in the NFL to count a victory before it happens, right? So Bears, Jets, Bengals sounds pretty easy. I think what I worry about is you don't want to see this team against Chicago on a three-game losing streak, knowing that that's an absolute honest-to-God must-win, because that is a difficult place for any team to play, even if they're at home. So, yeah, big week this week. We will recap the loss in Los Angeles tomorrow night. Jake will have a chalk talk where we'll dig into all of the ups and downs of this one. I think some good stuff to see there with the pass game, some bad stuff to see there on the defensive side, but I'm sure Jake will break it all down thoroughly. Tuesday night, Mike Keefe will have a preview of the upcoming opponent, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and then Garage Beers at 9 o'clock. Wednesday night, OBR Weekly will be here for your midweek question and answer session, and then Brad Ward there will be back on Thursday night, All Eyes on Cleveland, to really send us into the weekend. So another strong week by the OBR. We will have all sorts of coverage on the website as well about what went wrong in Los Angeles and what's to come over the week ahead. So stay tuned, both streaming wise and on the website. Thank you all for joining us tonight. We always have a pleasure talking with you all, even after a loss like this. Thank you to Ian McBride behind the scenes. Thank you to Brad Ward and Jake Burns for joining me. My name is Andrew Spade. Thank you for joining us. We will see you next week. Go Browns.
There's a very bright, shining light, Sarajevo, and they needed to kill that light.
From producers Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, explore how art and music sustained hope during the siege of Sarajevo, thanks in part to humanitarians and the band U2.
U2, they represent a personification of our resistance.
The Hollywood Reporter hails Kiss the Future, moving and inspirational.
Kiss the Future! Viva Sarajevo!
Kiss the Future, new documentary now streaming exclusively on Paramount+. Go to Paramount+ to try it free. Terms apply.